Wham! Talk 1600. You're catching the drift. Conservative talk. Intelligent conversations on local, state, and national issues with Gary Wellings, chief editor of the Current newspaper and Current online. Stand up for. Join in the conversation at 734-822-1600. 822-1600. And now, your host, Gary Wellings. Gary Wellings.
And welcome to another edition of The Drift. Joining me in studio, Brandon Drake.
We recovered. My headset and the microphone fell apart literally 20 seconds ago.
I was laughing before the show even started.
Headset now feels like a thorn of crowns on my head, but I will
endure. Your microphone falls off. You stand up to fix it, and down go your headphones.
They just totally dissolved. Kind of like Obama's will against Putin.
Well, welcome back to the show. As always, you, the listener, it's your show, too. If there's something you want to talk about that's not on our agenda today, you are more than welcome to call in, 734-822-1600, and join in on the discussion.
It's open line Saturday.
It's open line Saturday. I've got stuff I want to talk about, but nothing huge. Listening to Matt's show coming in, there was something I wanted to call into Matt's show, but he was not live today, so I couldn't call in. But
you know, one of the interesting things I heard on his show with his guest was that there are over 1 million feral camels in Australia running around farting. Causing all kinds of global warming. And so I guess if you shoot these camel, then you get carbon credits.
That's true.
That's what I heard.
What?
That's what I heard, yeah.
Chemicular flatulation.
And I know that Australia has excessive kangaroo populations because I think the predators have been wiped out to a large degree, so you can shoot those on site as well.
Oh, they make good burgers.
And those kangaroo, yeah, they're vicious. You don't want to get into a fight with a kangaroo, not even a boxing match. I guess their claws are so sharp they'll disembowel you like that.
Nothing like a good disemboweling in the morning.
It's kind of like a free colonoscopy.
I wonder if there's an Australian horror film that has like the crazy were camel in it, or the were kangaroo, a were-roo.
Like this serial mass murderer kangaroo.
What? A were-roo.
Yeah.
Were-roo 1, 2, 3, and 4. Return of were-roo.
Yeah, you see those psycho wildlife movies every once in a while where there's a renegade bear. When you were a kid, did you see that movie about the bear where he's running around killing everybody? And he would like give them this big bear hug and break their bones. And
wasn't that...
It was a really kind of a freaky, scary movie as a kid to see that.
It's right on the tip of my tongue. I remember it. But by the end of the show, I'll figure it out. Yeah. Anyways, Linda walks by the hallway going, "What that?"
She's going to have intervene at least once during this show.
Yes.
It has to be done.
Well, maybe we should. We're so far off base already. I don't know where we even went with this one, but well, let's take care of some business. Maybe that'll get us back on track. And I don't even have that prepared.
Let's get busy.
Fat, drunk, and stupid is no way to go through life.
Too late now.
I feel like I've been drinking for the last hour. I can't seem to get my head on straight for this show. All right, well, we're going to talk about Ukraine today. Let's just start with an agenda, shall we? After I clear my throat.
I'm with you, brother.
Right into the microphone. Sorry. All right, we're going to talk a little bit about Ukraine. We're going to talk a little bit about the drug pardons that Obama... You don't see a lot of it on the mainstream media, so we're going to dish on a little bit here. I'm not like an expert and didn't do a lot of homework on it, but I think it's worthy of discussion. So 734-822-1600, if you want to weigh in on any of these issues, feel free. The thing that struck me this week on Michigan CapCon, and if you haven't been to Michigan Capital Confidential, you need to go and read some of their content. Wow.
You need some coffee. It'll cure up that.
Yeah, we're not doing the coffee right now. You're right. I think we're going to have to go on break.
That little allergy phlegm thing.
Michigan State University is administering a program called the Building Trades Academy. And this is kind of near and dear to my heart because you may not know it, but I ran a building trades program for Metro Detroit Youth Foundation and American Building Trades way back in the day. And we trained young adults, not always young, some older adults, in Detroit, Highland Park, and Pontiac, who never graduated high school, and got them trained up in building trades, painting, drywalling, carpentry, roofing.
Fantastic.
Yeah, it was a good program. We put a lot of people, got them trained, and we found them jobs. That was part of the curriculum. We would line them up with interviews and get them employed.
And, shovel-ready jobs?
Huh?
Shovel-ready jobs?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, we would set them up with a company, they would interview, and away they would go. It was absolutely astounding. So it was a good program until, well, I'm not going to go into the details, but some administrating agency made off with the money.
Mm,
and I don't know that the state ever, yes. Yeah, so. But anyways, so it's near and dear to my heart that Voc-Ed is a good thing. We don't all need to go to college. We've been there and done that. A lot of people should be going into the trades because it's an honorable living and you can make a good money at it, right?
Sometimes much more.
Sometimes. And so anyways, the Building Trades Academy that teaches techniques aimed at unionizing employees. Instead of teaching them an actual trade, how to estimate jobs, how to take care of jobs, they're teaching them how to unionize employees. At what point does that actually help a business?
A bunch of little union community activists running around.
Yes. Where's the value added? And I think that's the way we need to look going forward in this country. I'd like one politician to say that. Let's look at all programming coming from a government level. And I don't care if it's state-funded universities, state-funded high schools and public schools. If there's no value added, let's not do it.
I can see the coursework. Okay, and the unions. Shakedown 101.
Yes.
Sleeping on the job 305. These are the core requirements.
How to skinny an extra break in, you know, to your work day.
How to have triple the workforce that you really need.
How to hide your back problems on the weekends from spying people, you know.
How to demand free food on those movie sets. Teamsters.
Well, anyways, in reaction to this, state lawmakers are threatening to make cuts to MSU's appropriations unless the university agrees to make changes. Well, very good. Senator Tanya, and I hope I'm pronouncing this right, Senator Tanya Shootmaker, a Republican from Lawton, is the chair of the Senate Appropriations Subcommittee on the Higher Education Budget. She said MSU's administration of such a program is not an acceptable use of state appropriation dollars. Yes, you are correct, Tanya.
The voice of reason.
The voice of reason. I sent her a Facebook email asking her to come on, but she probably won't even read it until later in the day or tomorrow or something. But, you know, this is one of the state senators who's got some common sense. This is a state senator who's doing her job. She's looking out for where our money is being spent. And this is complete and utter nonsense. This isn't the first time state's been on the hook this year. They had that other idiot that we ranted and raved about, the guy that was calling Republicans and old people. I can't remember the words he was using, but he was being very malicious towards old people because
we're so old we can't remember.
Sometimes I feel that way. Yeah.
So, oh yeah, I actually do vaguely remember now.
You think this, 20 years from now, you and I will be sitting in this? We'll be coming in walkers, of course. But the way my back's been feeling lately, I'll be rolling in probably.
We'll have those like those, you know, hospital beds, and we'll have the mic positioned down to us, and
let's just have somebody come in. And
we'll talk like something like, "I remember when I was a boy.
Yes,
we walked 20 miles through the snow, and we liked it. We loved it."
Well, let's continue here. Michigan State University, which is a public university, has taken over the duties of the National Labor College, a failed private entity previously run by the AFL-CIO. Number one, why is MSU taking over a private entity run by unions? What's the point? I mean, if you're going to do building trades, it's easy to do building trades. I've been there, done that. It's very easy to get a group of instructors together. You don't have to hire a professor. You go out and you find either retired or active, and they can be union or non-union. It doesn't matter. You hire professional carpenters, bricklayers, drywallers, masonry guys, and you pay them decent wage to get off the street and into the classroom and teach people how to do this. It's not brain surgery. Mm-hmm. You know, we did it, and it works out well. But why in God's name would you put union shop stuff into the equation.
Yeah, it makes no sense, and it's certainly a waste of taxpayers' dollars because, you know, Michigan State, University of Michigan, these, even though they charge big tuition rates, they are still publicly funded to a large degree by the taxpayer, you and me.
Yes, and I don't want my money going to a union, especially the AFL-CIO, because they funnel all their money directly into the Democratic Party, who furthers this. It's a vicious cycle of unions and Democrats and liberalism and screwing the taxpayer. Let's be honest. You know, this is special interests run amok.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm so hats off to Senator Tanya Shoemaker. We'll see if we can get her on maybe next week, if give a little
that'd
more
be
time.
Great.
Yeah, and see what she has to say about this. But touche to her. I wanted to give a shout out saying, you know what, that's your job as a senator. Find out what these universities are doing and go from there. You know, make them toe the line because we give them a lot of money, and I'm not sure that we should be.
Oh, I'm sure that if we wanted to streamline the university system in Michigan, hundreds of millions could be saved.
Yeah.
And not even really suffer that much.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And when we're going to table that and then come back after the break because there is something I want to talk about, and it's related to that affirmative action that we were talking about before. So, Derek, let's go into a break, and then we got a call from David in Ypsilanti. We'll take him when we get back from the other side of the break.
Sounds good.
To succeed in today's business environment, your business needs to be seen by as many customers as possible. The Current newspaper serves Washtenaw, Oakland, and Livingston counties. Advertising in The Current is the best way to get your money's worth out of your print media budget. The Current has grown 600% since 2007 because The Current has a unique venue for local content, common sense, and your business message. Getting your business message into thousands of homes utilizing The Current newspaper for mere pennies a piece is the best way to do that. And your ad is also seen online for free. Call Gary Wellings, chief editor of The Current, at 734-629-6010. That's 734-629-6010. Or go to currentonline.com. That's CourantOnline.com. Grow your business in print and online with The Current newspaper.
Hi, I'm Andy Deloney, Chairman of the Michigan Liquor Control Commission. We strive to ensure our licensees protect their customers by not selling to underage patrons or over-serving their customers. Michigan businesses licensed to sell alcohol are an asset to our economy, and the Commission wants responsible, law-abiding licensees to succeed. To learn more about the Michigan Liquor Control Commission and how we support licensees and protect consumers, visit our website at michigan.gov/LCC.
A public service message from the Michigan Liquor Control Commission.
Green light. Hey girl, school zone. I'm getting hungry. Car changing lanes. You want to meet me for pizza? Stop sign. Intersection clear. Yeah, street. Pizza sounds good. Ball in street? Girl in street!
It's hard to concentrate on two things at once, like texting and driving. Stop the text, stop the wrecks. How will you stop texting and driving? Tell us at stoptextstopwrecks.org. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Your local 911 center reminds you that when seconds count, help us help you with these simple steps. Know how to call 911 with the phone that you own. Not all phones tell 911 where you are, so always say your location first. If you use an internet-based phone, you must update your address with your provider when you establish service, move, or go on vacation. This ensures your call is routed to the correct local 911 center. When used properly, 911 saves seconds and seconds saves lives. Brought to you by your local 911 center.
I'm Professor Burke from Farmers Insurance, and this is 30 Seconds of Smart. So you want to save money on your auto insurance. Get an alarm, drive less,
taxi,
graduate, don't get pulled over, make automatic payments,
beep, boop, beep, beep, boop,
and of course, talk to farmers, because the more you know about auto insurance, the more you can save.
We are farmers. Bum, ba, dum, bum, 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 bum.
Get smarter about your insurance at farmers.com. To speak with a farmer's agent in your community, call 888-96-FARMERS.
Discounts and coverage not available in all states. Contact your local agent for details.
The days got worse and worse, and now you see I've gone completely out of my mind. And they're coming to take me away, ha-ha. They're coming to take me away, ho-ho, hee-hee, ha-ha. To the funny farm where life is beautiful all the time. And I'll be happy to see those nice young men in their clean white coats. And they're coming to take me away, ha-ha. They're coming to take me away,
ha-ha. Yeah, well, there
they're
we go.
To take me
I'm
away,
trying to remember where that's from.
I'm not sure of the band, but I love it.
Derek, you're going to have to look it up while we're chit-chatting.
I recorded it, but I don't recall now.
Yeah, I remember hearing that, well, like a junior high for me. So that takes me back to the 70s. Yeah.
I never got sick of that either. I was always amused, especially when he's talking about the birds and bees.
Yeah, well, they're going to probably come take us away after this show. We're out there today.
We're out there.
Okay, so we're going to talk a little Ukraine invasion, before we get started on it, let's just say the Russians have 40,000 people on the border, the Ukrainians are feeling like it's going to happen any day, John Kerry and Barack Obama are drawing more red lines about sanctions and whatnot, so with that in mind, let's take a call. Oh, we lost David from Ypsilanti.
Maybe the bump music scared him.
It might have.
Scared me.
Well,
a little.
Anyways.
Well, you're absolutely right. Okay, the situation is becoming more and more tense, and the more you have this rhetoric, I guess the Ukrainian foreign minister said just recently that Putin wants to start World War III, another big war in Europe, which may happen, even if that's not really Putin's intent, is to have a large scale war, because sometimes you know what happens. It's just something gets triggered and it escalates.
Yeah, you know, he's such a smart guy that I think he's got a plan to de-escalate after he gets what he wants, which is I think he just wants a chunk of Ukraine enough to be able to drive or rail to the Crimea, where they want that southern port in the Black Sea. It's important to them. They want it. And I'm going to go on a limb, and I'll probably get some grief on this. If the intent was true, that Putin and the Russians just wanted to save the Russian people who, I don't know, according to the estimates, 70% of eastern Ukraine and Crimea are Russian, I'm okay with that.
Well, it depends on how you define eastern Ukraine.
Yeah, well, exactly. You know, if there are
certain, pockets of Russians.
If there are parts of Ukraine that feel more Russian than Ukrainian, they weren't given a choice when the Soviet Union fell apart. Okay, somebody arbitrarily drew the line, said, this is Ukraine, you guys are Ukraine, you're a separate country now. You don't have a choice. So there might well be 70% of the people in that end of the country who say, we didn't have a choice, that wasn't our choice. We didn't want to leave Russia, and we'd prefer to be with Russia now. My problem with Putin is, why didn't you bring in the UN and say, let's hold elections? I think that's a fair enough thing to do. I believe in autonomy.
Because Ukraine would never accept that.
I don't know that Ukraine's got any choice in the matter now.
Well, that's the whole problem. That's why, I don't know what scale, but war could break out. Now, Yeltsin, he signed a deal with Ukraine when the Soviet Union fell to make that boundary permanent between Russia and Ukraine if Ukraine would turn over to Russia all the nuclear weapons that were on their soil during the days of the Soviet Union and the Cold War. So the Ukrainians are looking as that boundary as the integrity of their country. You know, they're saying, hey, we have this treaty that the president of Russia signed with us, and we're not giving up one more square inch of our land. And I think part of it is not only strategic, but it's also just a matter of pride. And if you keep caving, then you're looked at as weak, and a guy like Putin will manipulate and take advantage of you that much more. Now, I don't think Putin has designs on the whole landmass of Ukraine or going forward into, you know, all the way to, the North Sea or the English Channel. I don't think it's anything like that either. But my point earlier about how it could turn into a much bigger war than even Putin wanted is because sometimes when things, you know, the cat's out of the bag, the horse is out of the barn, whatever stupid analogy, metaphor you want to come up with, it's hard to reel it back in.
Right. Oh, that's anytime you got guys on both sides of a line pointing guns at each other, there's going to be a problem.
And it's a big ego thing with Putin, too. You know, the one thing I just want to say about Putin, every time I see a little documentary or something, you know, going back to when he was a student at, I don't know what it was it Leningrad State or whatever he went to school? I think he majored in law. He's got this demonic, dead look in his eyes. Have you noticed that? And like even now.
Don't all Russians? I don't mean that. I'm sorry. Well, I'm just joking.
Ones at 747s do. No. but now, have you noticed that? He has that look in his eye as if he has no emotion. He just looks like he's emotionally dead. And he has this robotic way about him of ambition.
Maybe he's an alien.
He looks like he could be an alien.
He's a Nephilim. They're still here, you know. I'm not a kid.
Or he's a zombie with a brain.
Yeah, I think that's years and years of conditioning, probably from when he was a small boy through being in the KGB and everything else. Has he got a heart? I'm sure he does. It's probably two sizes too small.
But it grows when he's with
the
this.
Grinch.
It grows when he's with this 25-year-old girlfriend.
Probably. Among other things.
I didn't say that.
Yes. He wants something, and as much as he can, obvious. I don't think he's going to
talking about his girlfriend still?
Maybe. I think he's got the out plan. He'll take as much as he wants and then back off and say, listen, I'm giving back 300 miles of what I took. Look, I'm compromising. So he's going to go for more than he really wants, obviously, and then pull back. I think... Short of, you know, for me, I would be sending not necessarily troops, but I would be arming every man, woman, and child in the Ukraine with AK-47s.
Crossbows, slingshots,
American
anything
ones.
You got.
I don't know if we have a company that makes an AK-47. I wouldn't give them the best of stuff, but I would certainly give every man, woman, and child in Ukraine a gun and let them decide for themselves. I think that's the best way to handle it. You know, if Russia wants to go into Ukraine... And knowing that every man, woman, and child in Ukraine is armed, you could end up like Afghanistan very quickly.
There could be a certain type of guerrilla war and resistance.
Absolutely. You know, and you sit back and you just funnel them support until it gets so expensive that Putin pulls his troops back to wherever that be. Is it back to Russia or is it back to just Eastern? I think he's going to take part of Eastern. He wants a landline. He wants to be able to contiguously move from Russia to Crimea. It's no if, and, or buts.
Yeah, and we can see that strategic reason why he would want that. But see, now what you said about a war of attrition, if you will, is that most people in 21st century Europe thought that that type of brutal hardship and death and misery and suffering was behind them. You know, that World War II and the Cold War pretty much settled all that. And so being supposedly civilized, you're not going to see a guerrilla war in Ukraine against Russia. The Russians are looking at, I think, like their last war with Georgia. Remember they went in there in kind of a blitzkrieg and they took the little strip of North Ossetia, I think it's called, because it's mainly Russian, and they said, all right, that's it. They grabbed it within, what, a couple of weeks?
Yeah.
The Georgians were helpless. I think that's, you know, kind of what Putin's risking doing Eastern Ukraine.
Yeah, he's rolling the dice and he's going to do it. I have no doubt.
Yeah, but Ukraine isn't Georgia. I mean, they have, I think, many more people and fanatical people that are going to say, you know what, we are not going to allow you to do that without a fight. Whereas in Georgia, they just kind of caved. That was just basically it.
Yeah, and I think Eastern Ukraine will cave as well. I think those people, because you know what, if they're 70% Russian, they're going to wipe out the other 30%. You could see some genocide or whatever going on. But I think that's going to happen. No ifs, ands, or buts about
it. You have Russian special forces out of uniform there, Spetsnaz, FSB, paramilitary, all those guys there. You know, and the other thing, too, is not only the Crimea like we're talking about. This is another obvious reason, if you want to be the devil's advocate and see Putin's side to this, is they're terrified of NATO expanding up to the Russian border. Which I can understand that. If I was a Russian, we are so justifiably so about Hezbollah coming into South America. Drug cartels on the Mexican border.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, but
justifiably so.
Oh, yeah, that time just flew. Wow. Well, 734-822-1600, you want to join in on the discussion? We're talking about Ukraine, but anything else that comes to mind? Bring it up this next half hour.
The Ukraine.
See you on the other side.
Always on the go, driving to work, running errands. How do they keep informed? They listen to Wham! Talk 1600, just like you. If you're a business owner, your message can reach these people wherever their travels take them. People tune to Wham! For the latest issues discussed by hosts Bill Bennett, Glenn Beck, and Bay Ronex. They stay tuned in for state and local news with Dan Martin, and they'll stay tuned for your message as well. Call 734-971-1600 and advertise your business with Wham! Talk 1600.
Fox News Radio, I'm Lillian Wu. Multiple tornado touchdowns confirmed yesterday in North Carolina, where officials say some 200 homes were heavily damaged or destroyed.
Beaufort County, North Carolina, a late-night twister sent more than a dozen people to the hospital and knocked out power to thousands. Loretta Hodges says she never saw it coming.
My husband saw it. He hollered for us to come on. We jumped in the truck and we took off.
Authorities declared a state of emergency at around 10:30 p.m.
Fox Radio's Karen McHugh. There are warnings of more possible severe weather.
From Nebraska down throughout the Big Bend. End of Texas. Tomorrow, it moves a little farther towards the east. Almost the entire state of Arkansas under a moderate risk of severe weather. Could be seeing some large and violent tornadoes.
Fox meteorologist Rick Reichmuth. And in Afghanistan's presidential election, preliminary results showing former Foreign Minister Abdullah Abdullah won the most votes, but not the majority needed to avoid a runoff. Fox News. We report. You decide.
It's time now for Wham! Talk 1600's Community Calendar with Brandon Drake.
Help fight ovarian cancer and register today for the Athleta Unleash the She 5K and 10K, an important awareness event for all Michigan women. It'll be held at Huron High School in Ann Arbor on May 11th with a start time of 9 a.m. For more information, visit UnleashTheShe.com. Rolling Thunders Chapter 5 of Michigan will hold their 13th annual Ride to Remember Saturday, May 17th, rain or shine. All are welcome. Staging at Memories Restaurant and Lounge, 1840 South Old US 23 in Brighton is at 9 a.m. There will be a breakfast buffet beginning at 9 a.m., $6 per person. The Ride to Remember leaves Memories at 11 a.m. and ends in Howell at the Old Courthouse. There will be a ceremony to honor our fallen heroes, which will commence at noon. This is a free ride to honor the fallen soldiers of Michigan. Non-motorcycles are welcome to meet at the courthouse. For more information, visit thepatriotspage.com or email Bob McCrate at rmccraight1968@aol.com. If you are eligible for Medicaid, elderly, and or physically disabled, the Information Center might be able to assist you in receiving long-term care in your home. The Information Center is a certified Michigan Choice Medicaid waiver agent. This program is an option for eligible persons to receive long-term care services in their home, such as homemaking, personal care, meals, etc. The program is available statewide for the frail elderly, 65 years and over, or persons who are physically disabled, 18 years and over. Financial and medical eligibility requirements must be met. For more information, please call 734-282-7171.
You've been listening to the Wham! Community Calendar. To have your event publicized, email community@whamradio.com. You're listening to The Drift on Wham! Talk 1600. Join in the conversation at 734-822-1600. Now, back to your host, Gary Wellings.
And welcome back to another edition of The Drift. It's Brandon Drake and I and Derek hang out for another Saturday. Derek, the name of that band, Napoleon the 14th? Napoleon?
Yep, that's right.
Napoleon, it doesn't ring a bell to me. I remember the song, but must have been one hit wonder.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it sounds like it.
Definitely. Okay, so we're talking about Ukraine. I was going to say the Ukraine. It just flows that way, doesn't it? The Ukraine.
It's more traditional.
Yes. Yeah. Traditionally bad, I guess, depending on who you're talking to. But one of the things that I saw this week, and it, for me, it was right off when this all started, it comes from being dependent. When you allow somebody to have too much control over you, in this case, Western Europe, Ukraine, allows all their energy to come from Russia.
Natural gas.
Natural gas. once somebody has that kind of control over you, what can you really do about it? I'm kind of surprised Putin just hasn't shut off the taps and said, I don't have to send anybody in. I'm just going to starve you out. I'm going to let you freeze to death.
And he's done that.
And he, yes.
Because in the past, Ukraine and some other countries haven't paid their bill like they should. I think some deals are being structured with us since now we're a natural gas exporter. But that's going to be a little more of a longer-term solution for Europe.
Yeah, it's going to take time. And one of the stories I put up today, actually, on the Daily Drift, was that Baltic states are leading the push to cut their reliance on Russian natural gas. And what they've got coming into the port of Lithuania is a ship the size of an aircraft carrier, which is a processing and unloading facility for natural gas. So instead of building a giant facility, which takes a long time, there's already a ship that acts like an unloading port. It's going to steam in there. They're going to tie it up, and it's going to unload gas, probably from us.
From Ukrainian sailors.
You think Ukrainian sailors have gas?
They look like they would.
I wonder if we had a Ukrainian sailor out in the hallway earlier. I'm just saying. Cutting that reliance to Russia, because who was it? Was it Kerry who said the Russians are a gas station masquerading as a country? In a way, that's kind of true, because they are not a real diverse economy. Russia is a major exporter of oil and natural gas. Mm-hmm. And the funny thing is, I imagine if they were fracking in Ukraine, they could probably make as much gas as Russia. I mean, just start fracking, folks. Knock it up. Just go for it, whatever it takes. Yeah. Cut your dependence on Russia by doing that, and he may toe the line, because like anybody, he's got a pocketbook. If you can't pay your soldiers and your undercover agents and your buddies in the Duma, I think is what they call the legislative branch there in Russia, you've got a problem. So what we should be doing, I think the biggest and best thing we could do is if for Barack Obama to say, you know what, we're going hog wild on drilling and we're going to take all the natural gas contracts for Western Europe and put the Russians out of business.
Do you think that if we didn't pay our bill to send supplies up to the International Space Station,
they'd cut us off?
They'd cut us off.
I'm surprised that they're still having peace with that issue, you know. That's what lends me hope. I mean, this is a squabble, a skirmish. I hope not too many more people die over it, but everyone comes to their senses and says, hey, let's do the right thing. You know, I'm one of those guys that believes in autonomy. If part of the people in Ukraine wish to be independent or wish to join Russia, I don't think that's a bad thing.
Okay, let me throw this at you. What if in parts of Arizona, Texas, New Mexico, Hispanic populations there voted to become one with Mexico? What would you do?
I don't like it, but I honestly, because of the actions we have taken as a country or inaction we have taken, I think that will happen.
And what would you
20 years, 30 years?
But my point is, if it does happen tomorrow or 30 years from now, and you were the benevolent dictator of the United States, what would you do as a solution? Would you let it happen? Would you crush it?
I would think at this point, if California said they wanted to leave the United States, I would say, knock yourselves out.
No.
And I think I absolutely would.
No, you can never
let
it happen.
Because that state is a drain on our country.
It's a strategic part of the United States that you could never let go, ever, regardless of their fiscal politics and their liberal nonsense. That's a geographic area and natural resources to a large degree and industry that
give away. If 80% of their population becomes Hispanics who wish to no longer be part of the United States.
Deportation.
Yes, that's the only way you can stop it. But you got to start now because guaranteed, just like you said, you may have been very prophetic in your statement. 20 or 30 years from now, most of the people in Arizona, Utah, California are Hispanic and identify more with Mexico because our school systems out there have not flown the American flag, have had Mexican bilingual language the whole nine yards.
We're a bilingual nation right now. You can't make a phone call. You can't go into a store. You can't read a label on anything without it being in English or Spanish. Go into Lowe's. Go into Home Depot. All the aisles are marked in English and Spanish. You know, like I used to, as a kid, kind of chuckle at Canada with their English and French, and I thought it was kind of cool, actually. You know, it was interesting because it was was different. Now we are the same way, except it's Spanish, and I find it outrageous. And what I was bringing up about, you know, you let them go or would you crush it, this is just me. A civil war was fought to decide, and 600,000 Americans died in that war, and many times more than that injured, to decide if you can leave the Union. And it was decided that you can't. Once you're in, it's like the mafia. Once you're in, you're not leaving, except in a box. And that's how. And I believe that there's no way you let any of these states go. So if we have to do whatever it takes to get the population, you know, stopping illegals from coming in and subverting the United States, the Union, then, yeah, we need to be doing that. But never, ever hold elections and say you go if you want. We're like Canada with Quebec. That's all nonsense.
But that's going to happen. I think that's the future of the world. We talk about globalism. I don't think it is. I think it's going to be a separatism. People are going to become more separate. I just don't see.
Well, that's instability on steroids then.
Yeah. Yes. And unfortunately, I don't think it's great. I don't like it. But I think that's going to happen. And short of another civil war, I don't see it. Unless you stop, seal that border, and crack down and be more sincere about America, caring for America, caring for our values, we will lose those values.
Well, I agree 100%. That's happening. But my point is, under no circumstances would I ever, if I was in charge, and if I have any say in it, allow any state to leave or any portion of a state to leave the Union.
Yeah. I think the world wants the United States broken up. I think the UN wants the United States broken up into pieces, just like it happened to the Soviet Union. The pressure is there to make that happen here. And I think, frankly, Barack Obama would probably never admit it, but I think people and progressives like him would also like. They call it open borders, call it whatever you want. They don't like a strong United States that is all one big country, one half a continent, whatever the heck we are here. They want to see it divided
up. And they look at us as almost an illegal country anyway.
Yes. Yeah. So 30 years from now, I'm going to try and remember this. If I don't have the archived podcast of the show available somewhere, we're going to archive it, because I think that's a real prophecy that at some point 30 years from now, unless we change what the United States is doing, unless we change our behavior, the government's behavior, to stop this wholesale slaughter of people just pouring across the border and not maintaining our values, we will lose those values. And I think in the schools right now, they don't. Especially in the universities, they don't preach pro-America anything.
No, because that's considered racist and fascist and every other stupid, inaccurate label you want to slap on it to undermine our sense of... Oh, and the racism thing, too. It's like, that's a division... Where instead of us just being Americans, now the division is African American, and you know, like that woman that wanted to get in the University of Michigan, all that hype, Brooklyn that Brooklyn. Undermines us as a nation.
Sure it does. Sure.
And
it does.
Like you said, 30 years from now, we're having this conversation, trying to remember if this Obamacare nurse is changing my diapers. I'm going to say, I remember when I was talking to my partner in radio.
Yeah.
And we forecast all this.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you will see the end of the United States. Maybe a confederation, could be something else, but I do not think you'll see the unions today as it will be 30 years from now.
Yeah, well, that's really depressing.
It's very depressing, and I'm feeling very uncomfortable we're even having this conversation, but I think people need to understand that. This is what you risk when you continue electing people like Barack Obama, Harry Reid, Nancy Pelosi, people who don't care about true American values. The values that they adhere to are progressive global values. They got nothing to do with what made our country great, with what brought us to this point in time. I mean, you can blame it on whatever happened in the 60s. We are no longer that country we were in the 50s.
Well, 1965, you know, in my mind, is the demarcation line where everything started to go to hell in a handbasket.
Yeah. So.
Ah, yeah. You people are cancer. We know we're under attack. We know it. Coming for you. Coming for you. We know what you're doing.
We're going to kill everybody.
Where was it from?
Calm down, Alex. I mean, this is the round table, not the buffet table. He's, it sounds like his blood sugar is a little low, and he needs to eat something.
Oh, too funny. Good time, Derek.
Look, he's, Derek's been on fire with the timing today.
Yeah, he's doing
kudos.
Good. Yeah, so it does. I am very uncomfortable even talking about it. You know, I don't want to.
So
sound
is
like
Alex.
I don't want to sound like a doomsayer. You know, I don't want to be that guy. But you know what? That's what lies in store for us if we live that long. Our children and our grandchildren are probably a country divided.
Okay, let me ask you this then. Let's sum it up here. We have a country that's heading in the wrong direction as far as national unity, based on everything we just talked about, you know, charges of racism and ethnic, you know, the diversity and everything, and the takeover by illegal aliens in various parts of the country. We have an over $17 trillion federal debt growing every year. We have unfunded Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security. We have kids that are becoming more and more stupid as far as understanding how the world works and competing in the world. They're more dependent on digital nonsense and social networking. Where is the silver lining in this? Where is the hope? Tell me one thing that you feel absolutely positive about that this country is going in a particular direction. One thing. I can't think of a single thing. And is that being negative or realistic?
No, because I'm sitting here trying to think. I am trying to be positive. And you know what? I'm drawing a blank.
Iran's on the verge of nuclear weapons, so the Middle East is going to be a total chaotic balance of power shift. North Korea, of course, Venezuela. Where in the world, Russia, Ukraine, where in the world is anything going in our direction or at home?
Yeah. The only thing I could hope for is that at some point, Vladimir Putin, his successors, the people of Russia, will realize that they have more in common with today's Western Europe and us than they do China, Iran, the rest of the Middle East. Because I think the average Russian, I hope the average Russian, is like the average American. I want a chicken in my pot. I want to come home after work at night. I just want my job, my paycheck, take care of my family, watch TV. I believe that.
But I think that's part of the problem. I think that's already kind of true, and so their government is kind of running amok and doing what they want. I mean, if it wasn't for Russia, Iran would not have a nuclear weapons program.
Yeah, because they were thinking reactors. They were thinking short term.
Yeah, for a few billion dollars, they sold out to this radical country on their border.
Yeah, yeah. It's so short-sighted on his part. But again, he's probably dealing with the same capitalists who care nothing for anybody or anything but themselves. And instead of thinking long term, I'd like to know this question. Has anyone ever approached the Russian government, Vladimir Putin, and said, you have nothing to fear from Western Europe. You have nothing to fear from the United States militarily. Economically, we're all competitors. Why don't you join NATO and you'll never have to fear being attacked or defending your Western borders again?
Because then it's a matter of who really controls NATO.
I think he would have as much say as the United States would, and he's closer to Western Europe. Why? I don't understand why he would not just say, because he's no longer, it's not an ideological difference anymore. It's not communists versus capitalists. The Russians are capitalists now. So there's nothing for him to really defend against Western Europe. The best thing he could do is say, you know what, I'll stop everything. I want to join NATO. Why wouldn't he make an overture? Has anyone ever said that? I would like to know if NATO has ever made that offer. Listen, we've worked together. Why don't you guys just join NATO and we can pool our resources and do things and we'll compete against each other on an economic standpoint and stop all this militaristic nonsense. Let's point our guns in the right direction, which should be south of the border. You know, because it's the Middle East that's aggressive. It's China that seems to be aggressive. You know, yeah. That really is where Russia should be worrying about. They should we the United States is not looking to attack Russia.
No, and I think that's been conveyed to them, and I think they probably know that deep down. But they do have a history of being invaded, and there's a lot of turmoil. But I think you just summed up the reason, though, why Russia isn't going to listen to this, because you mentioned Chinese aggression. The Russians have that in them, too. Putin, especially, wants to see Russia as a superpower. You know, the humiliation of the Soviet Union falling, being looked at as this failed state. He wants to recapture Russia's historical glory in his mind. You know, from Catherine the Great and all these other.
I don't think Russia is any less of a superpower than us right now. That's just me. They have a navy that's probably maybe not quite as big as ours, but they're all over the world. You can't go anywhere and not see a Russian naval ship on the globe.
Yeah, they are and they aren't. I mean, you know, they've got the nuclear weapons, like, you know, just probably just as many as we do.
Yeah.
But how many are as effective as ours and up to date? And there's structural problems in their economy, their military, their social everything.
Yeah, that's splitting hairs.
But my point is that Putin doesn't want to just say, okay, we'll join and we'll be this sub partner. He wants to be the man. He wants to be the boss of bosses.
But we're never going to have that.
No, we won't. But that's not what he sees it as.
He can be as big a man in NATO. Well, he's probably a better man than Barack Obama would ever be when it comes to being a leader. And I'll give him credit for that. But I would hope that, you know, at some point, maybe there's a Russian guy monitoring WAM Talk 1600. And you know what? Tell Vladimir Putin, just join NATO, and you'd no longer have to worry about that.
But there's probably, you know, conditions to joining NATO that he does not see as beneficial when he could be the big cheese. And that's his mindset.
Maybe. I mean,
he's very, very aggressive and doesn't want to submit to anyone. And when you're in NATO, you kind of give up your autonomy a little bit in that, like, for NATO to take an action anywhere in the world, supposedly it takes a unanimous vote.
Like the UN?
Yes. Well, the United Nations, I don't know if it's, I think it's even more, it has to be a, for any military action by NATO, it's a unanimous vote. Every country in NATO has to say yes.
Right.
And then, you know, the devil's in the details, because as we know from Afghanistan, you know, a lot of these, quote, NATO partners didn't contribute squat. You know, a few hundred soldiers here and there.
Yeah,
we're the ones that shoulder the load. Don't get me started on NATO.
Yeah, well, that's what, you know, from a selfish standpoint, I'd like to have Russia be part of NATO, because you know what? We wouldn't have to shoulder as much. I would hope that the Russians would contribute equally with us. I can understand that, you know, let's face it, Germany, France, Britain, they may have nukes, but you know what? They're not superpower. Their militaries are nowhere near what ours or the Russians would ever be, you know? So, but it'd be nice to have somebody else to rely on besides England.
Yeah, but I don't see relying ever on Russia. And I think whether Russia can join NATO, I think, is a very complex subject, you know, where it gets down to even the equipment that you would have to have and integrated into the NATO logistics. And, you know, like when Poland, I remember, wanted to join NATO, you know, they had to spend a lot of money reconfiguring everything and, you know, equipment-wise,
right,
and be part of the command and control structure.
Well, maybe Russia already wants into NATO. They're sending their jets all through the Dutch airspace and the English airspace anyways. They must want in, right?
See, I see your point, yet it still doesn't feel right to me. And it's almost like, you know, the Jehovah Witnesses asking the Charles Manson group, just join us. It just doesn't... It doesn't feel right.
Hell to skeleton. Yeah. Well, let's move on, shall we? I think we can beat that one to death and get
no offense to the Jehovah's Witnesses.
Yeah.
I'm not. They can go out and bother people as much as they want. I'm not opening the door.
Yeah, people. Yeah, I understand where you're coming from. I think I'm dreaming and simplifying things as it is.
But you make a certain logic and point. It just I'm always going to be the other side of that, because it doesn't feel right to me. Oh, I know there's more to the story.
That's
because
we grew up
right.
Hiding under our school desk, worrying about the atomic bomb. Let's do a drill.
Did you ever do the duck and cover? That was little. I think that was a little before. I mean, I know I'm a couple years older than you, but I don't recall ever doing that. I remember in the hallway. We had to all kind of like sit down in the hallway, but I don't remember ducking under our desks.
Yeah.
I think that was about 10 years before us, wasn't it?
No.
Because Theron remembers that.
I remember doing that. Hmm. Yeah. Pretty sure. Yeah. Yeah, I wasn't looking for a pencil. I know that.
Can you imagine a hydrogen bomb goes off and you think that hiding under your little kindergarten desk is going to...
Well, you'll laugh. I was, in one of my former lives, I was an asbestos removal estimator, right? So I would go into...
I want to see your resume someday because I keep all these different careers you've had.
And I remember walking into an old part of, it was the Ford Rouge plant. There was a building there that they wanted to tore down, but it was filled with asbestos. So I had to walk through it and do estimates of what it would cost to get all this asbestos out of the building, right? And so there's always crap lying around in these empty buildings. And I remember, and I think I still have it somewhere, there was a box. I opened it up, and it was a bunch of pamphlets on how to survive a nuclear attack. And so I grabbed, a few of them, and I took them with me because they were just rotting in the corner. And I think I still have a copy, but it's comical to read it now. But it really takes you back to the days when, nuclear war was...
Oh, every day we live with that mindset. Yes, absolutely.
And how close are we again to that point?
Well, if you hear we're going to DEF CON 1, be afraid.
Yeah. Well, let's move on. I wanted to talk a little bit about...
Dr. Strangelove.
You know what? Watch Dr. Strangelove. I'm going to watch it with my kid. I don't know that he'll understand it because having not grown up in the age of nuclear warfare... I don't know that young kids today can even fathom what you and I went through.
Kids say like 25 and under have no clue about the Cold War and what we live with on a daily basis.
Yeah. I mean, it was something I thought about all the time as a kid. It was part of life.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to have nuclear war this week, maybe.
Yeah. It was not out of the question by any means. Every waking moment you thought, this could be the day.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, that's... Here we go. Can we get disability for that?
You know, Dr. Strangelove, and no wonder we're so demented. Dr. Strangelove, my favorite character actually was George C. Scott.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that was great. And who was that? Was it Rip something that was he rolled the bomb out of the? He'd free that bomb up
Slim
the fall.
Pickens.
Slim Pickens.
Slim Pickens. Yeehawing it all the way down.
Yeehaw.
Yeah, great movie. We're going to have to watch that soon. I wanted to talk real quick about the Obama drug pardons. Eric Holder and Barack Obama are, again, kind of making their own rules up, and they're going to free a lot of drug felons who are in jail, sitting in jail. They're saying they didn't use violence or whatnot, so this is the idea. And they're going to free thousands of people. And something that was odd this week, as the President Obama prepares to use his executive power to release these thousands of felons, the Justice Department's top official in charge of these pardons is quitting rather than going along with this. Let me see if I can dig up his name here. Attorney Ron Rogers is the Department of Justice pardon attorney. Now, this is the guy that's in charge of it. He disagrees with Eric Holder and the president and is quitting his cushy job because he disagrees with it. What does that tell you? What should that be telling all of us when the guy who's in charge of that says, that's crazy. You can't let all these people out of prison.
It says that President Hussein Obama and Eric Holder are being consistent in their nuttiness.
Consistent in not obeying the laws of the country.
Right. Just picking and choosing which laws they want to follow.
Yeah. Which, you know what? Come election time, let's hope people remember these things. All right, until next week, go to thedailydrift.com. Stay apprised of the situation and stay educated.
Keep fighting the good fight.
See you next week.